now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Back, everybody. Another edition here of the Auburn Undercover Podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. My name is Nathan King. It is finally game day. If you are listening to this, the pregame pod previewing, giving our final thoughts here, your last minute fix on Penn State. And of course, as we are with every pregame show, we are joined by an opposing team reporter, and today it is Mr. Daniel Gallen from Lions 24/7. And you guys will remember Daniel from over the summer, I believe, boy, all the way back in May. We were sort of riding the wave after they announced the game time, and everyone was excited about it. And Daniel, I mean, months later, we talked about it back then. We were like, yeah, you know, everything we're saying is just from, like, you know, 30,000 feet out, where, you know, it's going to be a long time until this game actually gets here. But now it's finally here. So I guess, how are you feeling about heading down to Auburn as part of the, you're part of the first ever Big Ten crew to make it to Jordan-Hare Stadium?
I'm feeling great about it. I think this is something that we've had circled on the calendar for a long time, and it's finally here. Early in game week, it can always be kind of like so much to do to get ready, for that before you leave Friday. But and now it's Wednesday afternoon as we're recording this, and you know, you're starting to get excited, starting to really nail down some of the storylines, starting to nail down the logistics of actually getting to Auburn and what that's going to be like. So I'm ready. I'm excited to get down there. First time for me at Auburn, first time for Penn State at Auburn. I think it'll be a good weekend of firsts.
Now, assuming nothing else has come out, again, like Daniel said, recording this on Wednesday afternoon, assuming nothing has been finalized, which I would assume that it hasn't, I must ask you your thoughts on orange jerseys, because apparently everyone else has to have their opinion on it as well. So you tweeted today that it's fashion watch down in Auburn. What are your thoughts on the orange jerseys as someone who is not, you know, implicated with the Auburn program whatsoever?
Well, as a Maryland alum, I'm very in tune with Fashion Watch and alternate uniforms and jerseys and the whole nine yards. So I don't get to flex that muscle as much at Penn State, because you know what you're going to get no matter what, week in and week out. But I think it would be pretty cool. I think it would be something different. I mean, I really like the traditional Auburn uniforms. I thought that the white face masks last year at Beaver Stadium was a nice little touch. I think the orange face masks look pretty sharp. But I think it would be interesting. It would be something different. This game already has a lot of juice, but I think it might add a tiny bit more. And I would also be curious just kind of how it looks, because I know that Auburn jersey is so traditional. It's one of the, as the uniform nerd in me, I mean, it's one of the only Under Armour uniforms that hasn't gotten the alternate treatment or a redesign, really, or anything. So I think it would be fun. It'd be just kind of another level as we go into things. We all know that Penn State loves its white out. We're gonna have the orange out on Saturday, and you know, what's more orange when you've got tens of thousands of people wearing it in the stands? What's just 22 more guys on the field?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, your boy Josh Vitale, who was obviously, people at Auburn know from his time on the beat here, and you guys were in school together at Maryland. Yeah, he tweeted today. He was like, you know, the only way you can do it is actually what Auburn did the first time they wore the orange jerseys against Georgia. They came out, warmed up in Navy, and then the players didn't even know, but they had them waiting for them at their lockers. That's, you have to do, if you're going to do it, you have to do it that way.
give it like the second wind. So when they, it's like a surprise at the last minute, which I understand Maryland did in like 2011 or something.
That was the Labor Day night against Miami. LeBron James was not a fan. And
okay, so that was that game. I'm trying to remember correctly. Okay. I remember watching that game. I didn't remember that they switched it up pregame.
Oh yeah. It was, I think the players knew, because you'd seen the helmet had popped up on social media earlier in the week, but it was a pretty good, nice little bait and switch, that I think it's harder to get away with now, the way that things are. But at the time, it was fun, and you know, I'm all it's college football. I mean, anything that can make it kind of different or unique, you know, let's do it. Let's get weird.
Yeah. Well, anyway, guys, that's it for the episode. We will everybody enjoy. You know, of course, we got to get into the matchup. I will start with the man who is a polarizing figure in Penn State football. We talked about him. All the way back in May, he absolutely demolished Auburn last season. Sean Clifford, of course, the sixth-year starting quarterback. He went 28 of 32 in that game. Last season, I would imagine that's one of the best performances for a Penn State QB in a long time. Is the most accurate a quarterback had been against Auburn since at least the late 80s, I think with like 20-plus completions or 20-plus attempts. And so, you know, we were talking about before we started, I feel like that Purdue game was the quintessential Sean Clifford experience. He made the huge mistake, but then he himself also kind of willed them back to victory. I guess, what are you expecting from not only Clifford, but this passing game? I understand, you know, they lost Jahan Dotson. Mitchell Tinsley was a guy you brought up in the offseason. Seems like he's been every part as advertised. Just what do you expect from Clifford in this game? And do you think they can replicate that kind of performance? I don't know. What are the main factors for this passing game going to be against what's probably it's definitely the best, most talented defense they've faced so far this season.
I think the big thing for Clifford is going to be how he comes out and how he starts the game. I think that'll be a good little indication, or can go a long way towards determining how this game comes out. The book on Clifford is that, he's a fiery guy, emotional guy, wears his heart on the sleeve. That's great in the locker room. Sometimes that can translate to being a little too jacked up on the field when you come out. So I think if he can come out and have those emotions under control and kind of keep the offense on schedule, I think that can go a long way. You know, avoiding getting into a big hole with a turnover or too many three and outs or some bad field position. So I think that's the big thing I'm watching with Clifford. He says he's more comfortable in year two in Mike Yurcich's offense. I think that he does get a boost from the running game. Nick Singleton is an element that Penn State did not have at all last year. And so it'll be kind of interesting to see how that opens things up, how that changes the shape of the defense. But the thing with Clifford is that he has all the weapons on the outside. I mean, the skill talent around him is, I think it's pretty good. You look at the top three wide receivers. Parker Washington had a big year last year. He's been a little quiet to start this year, but he's someone that can kind of sneak up on you with 8 catches for 100 yards, and 90 of those yards are after the catch. He's a really good slot receiver. Mitchell Tinsley has been as advertised. He was in that Western Kentucky offense last year and just put up, you know, insane numbers. I think it was 87 catches, 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, and all those marks ranked second on that team because of how they played. He's come in. I mean, he's been the veteran. He's got 2 touchdown catches in the opener. He led the team with 7 catches for 84 yards and a touchdown, 12 targets. I was kind of surprised. It didn't feel like that much. He's that kind of wide receiver where even if he's getting a lot of catches, it doesn't feel like it's being forced to him, which I like. And then the third starter is Keandre Lambert-Smith, who had a pretty big roller coaster ride against Purdue. I think he had 3 dropped passes, but then he came back and had a go-ahead touchdown. This 29-yarder where he took a slant across the middle, took a hit, bounced off it, and outraced everyone. I think he's the toolsiest wide receiver on the roster, but he just hasn't quite hit his ceiling yet because of the mental mistakes. The drops are an issue with him. And I think it was a promising sign in week one where he was able to bounce back from those drops. So I like the wide receivers a lot. And then if you go a little bit further down the depth chart, Harrison Wallace, the third, AKA Trey, Alabama kid from Pike Road outside of Montgomery. He's getting his homecoming. He said today that he grew up as an Alabama fan, but he went to Auburn games when he was younger, and that he also went there as a recruit. So he's excited to get back there. He's a redshirt freshman. He's gotten a lot of run early. And then the last wide receiver I'll mention is Omari Evans. He's a really interesting case. He was a high school quarterback in a run-heavy offense in Texas. Came up and worked out for the staff last year when in the recruiting calendar they were letting guys work out in non-camp environments. It was a COVID thing to help with exposure. He came up, ran in the 4.3s, and got the offer, committed, enrolled early, and I think we all had him penciled in as a redshirt candidate, because even with that speed, if you've never played wide receiver before, I don't think college is exactly the easiest time to learn it, but he's gotten a lot of run in the first two games. It looks like they're going to burn his redshirt, and that speed is something that Penn State hasn't really had. So I think that number 18, I'm not exactly sure how much you'll see him because they lean on those top three guys so much, but that's another wide receiver that is around Clifford that can give him something else in that offense.
They were obviously, and you mentioned it a little bit, they were one of the worst teams in college football last year. Running the football, seems like they might have had a little juice inserted with a guy like Singleton. Boy, he's looked every bit the part in these first couple games. How much of a factor, an X factor, a difference maker in this game is a guy like Singleton for you? Because it's really an element they didn't have when they faced Auburn last season.
Definitely. I mean, you watched him against Ohio, and I know it was Ohio, so it's the caveat. What can you do against an SEC defense? What can you do against a Big Ten defense? Because obviously, MAC defense, it's not the same caliber. But I mean, even then, he was still able to get to the corner. He was still able to run away from guys. He was able to shed tacklers. And you just didn't have that last year. I mean, last year, it was 2 yards, first hit going down. It was just not pretty. And then last year was just kind of the combination of they didn't have a running back that could make up for the deficiencies of the offensive line. And they didn't have an offensive line that could make up for the deficiencies of the running backs. I think Singleton, jury is still out on that O-line, which I'm sure we'll get to, but I think you look at Singleton and he is that type of running back where, if he gets hit in the backfield, he's not going to go down right away. He can break tackles. He can get to the second level. He's still pretty green. I think you go through, you go through the tape and you watch some of his runs and you can be like if he cut it back here, if he hit this hole, if he went outside here, he would have had more. But I mean, he had 3 runs of 40 plus yards against Ohio, touchdown runs of 44 and 70, non-scoring run of 48. I mean, we saw nothing even close to that last year. So you're still going to see a lot of Kevon Lee now, who's kind of the bigger bruiser. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts, or, quote unquote starts, is the first running back out. And Penn State trusts him a lot. He had the game winning touchdown catch against Purdue. And then Catron Allen is the quote unquote other freshman, who is still a 4-star recruit out of IMG, a top 24/7 guy. His nickname was Fat Man coming out of high school. And he kind of had the reputation of a bigger kind of bruiser, but he's been really smooth. I like how he hits the hole. I like how he follows his blocker. He's been a good receiver, which is something that I don't really think was featured prominently in his scouting report. So I think they got new blood back there. I think Singleton and Allen, you can just tell that it's completely different than what they had last year, and that they can really raise the level of this offense, which in turn can, well, I think they can raise Clifford's level, which could help raise the level of the offense.
What do you make of this? You talked about the offensive line. We've been discussing it a little bit this week. Auburn had difficulty getting pressure with only 3 or 4 guys last season in this game. And of course that contributed to Clifford being able to hit some of those throws. It's a bit improved. Auburn, I think over the course of last season, their pass rush got a little better and then they returned their top pass rushing guys. Kind of what do you make of that matchup? Because it really seems like, also when you look at TJ Finley, on the other side, it really seems like whichever quarterback can be affected more, a turnover in this game, a couple turnovers, especially for guys like Clifford and Finley, who are kind of known to do that, could sway the flow of the game.
It's going to be really interesting to watch. I think I'm confident in the left tackle, Olu Fashanu. He's a redshirt sophomore. He started for the first time in the Outback Bowl against Arkansas and held his own. And, you know, coming into this year, he's just looked really, really good. He's the type of left tackle that when you watch him block someone on the edge, he just kind of swallows them up. Like they just kind of disappear as they run into him. He's been a very pleasant surprise. Obviously, this will be his first test, something really big for him. And then center Juice Scruggs is solid. I think when you get to the other three spots, it gets a little bit dicier. Caden Wallace is a third-year starter at right tackle. He struggled against Purdue in the opener. He got beat really badly for a key sack in the fourth quarter. And then in the next drive, there was Bryce Heffner, who was the top reserve tackle. He was out there. And after the game, James Franklin said that, oh, yeah, we were going to rotate Heffner in there at some point during the game. But I think right before the, you know, second most important drive of the game in the fourth quarter, I don't necessarily think that that's how the rotation is drawn up. But we did see them rotate early against Ohio. So that's a position I'm really curious to watch. Wallace has all the physical tools. I mean, he's massive. I think he's listed, you know, around 320 pounds, 6'4", 6'5", just a really, really big guy. Effner's a little bit smaller at 287, I believe. So it's kind of different styles, but that's kind of where I think that's the position on the offensive line I'm watching the most. And then on the interior, there's a three guard rotation. Salim Wormley, who missed last year with an injury, he's looked really solid in coming back. He owns that right guard spot for the most part. And then at left guard, they're rotating Landon Tangwall, a redshirt freshman who was the highest rated recruit in that very small class of 2021. He's rotating with Hunter Norzad, who's a redshirt senior, grad transfer from Cornell, was an all Ivy League right tackle. And he's come over and is playing on the interior. He plays some center, plays some right guard. But I think that they've been rotating there. It's been on like a quarter by quarter basis. And both have been fine. Norzad got beat really badly by a sack against Ohio. Tangwall, I think, is holding his own. And I think, you know, people are really excited about him. By the time he finishes his career, he should be a top offensive lineman. But the interior spots have new faces. So it's been kind of, you know, wait and see in there. But, you know, I think that people haven't quite seen the dominant performance that they want to see to feel good about that offensive line. Given what Auburn has on defense, I don't think we'll get that Saturday. But I think that they should be up for it. And, you know, if Penn State wants to win, wants to assert itself on this game, it's going to need those guys up front to show it.
On the flip side, of course, you have a guy in TJ Finley who has three interceptions through the first couple games. Not what you want to see, especially against Mercer and San Jose State. You know, here in the early portion of the season, obviously he's still getting his feet wet as a starter and getting things set up there in the passing game. Does Penn State have the kind of pass rush to bother him? And then, I guess, branching off of that, what do you make of Penn State's run defense early in this season? Because, you know, obviously if Tank Bigsby, that was a big key last year, was Tank Bigsby was pretty successful. That allowed them to open up the passing game a little bit. I guess just what's your assessment of what they might be able to do in that regard?
I mean, in theory, the pass rush should be good. I think when you look at who they have, but right now their leading sack getter is a cornerback. Johnny Dixon has two sacks off of corner blitzes. And the defensive ends they've gotten to the quarterback. They've been able to affect some things. They've been able to knock balls down at the line. Some of it is style based. Purdue, Aiden O'Connell was just getting the ball out before guys could even get there. You know, they didn't sack him until the fourth quarter. I think there were only maybe two or three quarterback hits in that game. But the talent is there. Adisa Isaac is coming back from a torn Achilles. He said last week that he's about 85%, but he's fast. He can get off the line. I think he's still getting comfortable putting off some of the rust. You know, he suffered that injury more than a year ago at this point, but as we know, I mean, that's a tough one to come back from, even with the way that medicine is now. On the other side, you got Chop Robinson, Maryland transfer, former five-star recruit in the class of 2021. He has been, his development has been interesting. He was a 3-4 outside linebacker at Maryland, and now he's a 4-3 defensive end for Manny Diaz. And he's still kind of getting, he's still putting on size, still getting used to playing with his hand in the dirt a little bit more, but his get off is unbelievable. He can just get after quarterbacks. I think that, you know, he played the fewest snaps of the starting rotation last year with a, or last week with Adisa Isaac and Nick Tarburton. But it still felt like he made the most plays out of all of them. He was just always around the quarterback. I think he's the type of talent that can be a difference maker. So the pass rush, we still kind of need to see it. Like, we need to see those guys beat their tackles and make things happen. But the way that Manny Diaz has schemed things up a little bit with bringing pressure off the edge, blitzing some of the linebackers, that's kind of, that's gotten after quarterbacks, that that's flustered guys a little bit. The run game is going to be really interesting. Purdue had some success, but they're not going to run the ball on a regular basis. That's just not what they do. Ohio, I think, was just a little overmatched. So it was hard to get a good read off of that. But the last time we saw this Penn State defense was down the stretch last year when, you know, they got gashed by Illinois. They got gashed by Michigan. They got gashed by Arkansas in the bowl game, even though like half the defense had opted out at that point. But I'm going to be really curious to see how that holds up. PJ Mustafa coming back is huge. He suffered a season ending injury at Iowa last year. So he's another guy who is still kind of playing to get his feet under him. But they've got some good depth there. Hakeem Beamon was unavailable last year for undisclosed reasons. He's more of a quick, maybe interior pass rusher. So I'm curious to see how he holds up against that running game. But they've got guys behind them. Zane Durant is a true freshman who's played a lot early. Devon Elise played a lot in Mustafa's absence last year, and he's another kind of space eater. And then they have Jordan Vandenberg, who's a redshirt freshman who's, you know, more in that like quick, twitchy interior guy mold. But they've got some bodies in there. And then I'd also mention Nick Tarburton, who will be one of the defensive end starters. He's a great kind of first, second down, you know, run stuffing defensive end. So they have guys up there. But this is going to be the first real test for that interior offensive line. And they didn't always have success there last year.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Yeah, I saw some Penn State players we're talking about this week. You know, the Curtis Jacobs, I believe, yep, is the linebacker. Yeah, he said, you know, I didn't come to Penn State to play 7-on-7, so I'm excited to go and start hitting some big dudes. So that, I mean, you see it over and over again, and it's kind of a simple key in big games, but you win the trenches and you're going to have a pretty decent opportunity, especially because this is a quarterback situation for Auburn where, I mean, you'll see plenty of Robbie Ashford. I'm not sure how much you'll see him throwing the football, but you'll definitely see sort of a change of pace runner. But I mean, TJ Finley is faster, but he's not going to be able to evade the pressure like a guy like Bo Nix was last season. So you've mentioned Purdue a couple times. I guess, were you surprised at how close that game was? Or was that, you know, obviously it's a tough season opener to go on the road. I mean, Purdue is used to upsetting people. It's kind of what they do, especially on their home turf. But, you know, I guess my question is there anything to be taken from that game in comparison to another road game for Penn State, or do you think that was just kind of a difficult game for Penn State because of where it was positioned and the fact that it was the first game of the year?
Yeah, I picked Purdue to win that game. It was just hard to get a feel for things because it was the season opener. Purdue did have that track record, and there's just a lot of questions about Penn State, and I think that, you know, the questions have all kind of been half answered. I think we'll have a lot more answers after this weekend, but, you know, like quarterback, offensive line, a whole new defense under Manny Diaz, all new specialists because Jordan Stout moved on. You know, Penn State just kind of went into week one with a lot of questions. This week, the players have been asked a lot whether or not they think that, you know, oh, having that Purdue game under their belt, does that help going into Jordan-Hare? And I guess it does in a little bit where they've already done the road game thing once this year, because that's, you know, that's always different. It's always different being in a, you know, the hotel, busing to the game. But, you know, I think that they recognize that this is kind of a different beast than Purdue. Even though Purdue gave them a really good game, that's just kind of what Purdue does. And they had the talent advantage. For the most part, they had the physical advantage over them, where I think that they know that this will be a little bit more evenly matched. And just kind of it's just a different beast, I think. I think that's kind of how I'm looking at it going into Saturday.
Yeah, you mentioned evenly matched. I think that's, you know, neither of these teams, I think, blow you away in any regard, especially when you're comparing sides of the ball, the O-line versus the D-line. You know, like you talked about the run defense. This seems like a decently, you know, well set up game for both sides. I find it hard to believe. I think if there were to be some sort of blowout, it'd probably be in the home team's favor with, you know, if there were to be a bunch of mistakes from Penn State. But I even in that regard, I don't really see that happening. Fingers crossed that it's going to be a close game. And I think that'll be the case. And of course, that'd be great for everybody because it should be like you mentioned at the beginning. This will be a great college football game. It's the first time Auburn has ever hosted a Big Ten team before. We've mentioned the atmosphere, all that kind of stuff. It should be. And then Auburn, obviously, sort of a revenge spot from last year. What are you feeling? Obviously, this is Saturday morning as people will hear this. But now it's Wednesday afternoon. As I understand it, you said you have locked in your prediction for this game. As folks listen to this on Saturday, they've all read our predictions on our site. So which way are you leaning in this game on CBS this afternoon?
I'm leaning towards Penn State. I have a final score of 26-17. I think there's going to be a lot of field goals from Penn State. I'm curious to see how well they can finish drives against Auburn. They did a good job of finishing against Purdue, but obviously different type of defense, different level of talent out there. You know, I see the Penn State offense, you know, being able to move the ball. I don't think it'll necessarily be consistent, or it's hard to see it being consistent, but I think they'll get enough plays that they'll move the ball enough. And then I think the Penn State defense, I mean, looking at the Auburn offense, yeah, it's just hard to see them breaking off a lot of big plays. And just based off of what, you know, I've seen, what I've read, it's hard to see them, you know, putting up three touchdown drives against this Penn State defense. I do think the way that they play under Manny Diaz, they can be a little bit more susceptible to big plays, but I do like what I've seen out of Diaz. I mean, there's a lot more creativity on the defense. Like last year under Brent Pry, it was pretty much like, all right, we're going to run out the three linebackers, and then the one linebacker is going to come off the field and the nickel is going to come on. And that was pretty much all it was the whole game. But Manny Diaz is rolling out these, you know, seven defensive back packages, playing Jair Brown, the safety at linebacker. They're putting just, you know, three pass rushers on the line and just telling them to go, blitzing the nickel, blitzing the dime. It's just different. And I think that given that Auburn is a little unsettled at quarterback and it's not the, you know, not world beaters back there, I think that Penn State can really affect the game from the defensive side. So I got 26-17. You know, we'll see. It's just been a really hard game to get a real feel on this past week.
Yeah, not too far off from mine. I'm rolling Penn State as well, 24-17. Again, like we talked about, Hopefully it's a great game. I can't imagine that it won't be close in the fourth quarter. And, you know, because of that, there should be some plays that'll be remembered for both teams, whoever wins for the rest of the season, kind of like some of those plays that Penn State made at the end of that game. Obviously, that was a huge win for them in front of their home crowd. So thank you so much to Daniel for hopping on today. Let the people know if, you know, I know it's game day, but if they want to go get any last minute reading in on Penn State, where they can find y'all stuff today and throughout the game. It wouldn't be bad to give y'all a follow to get the Penn State side of things.
Yeah, go to lions247.com. You can follow Lions247 on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at DanielJTGallen. There's going to be a couple of us from Lions247 down in Auburn. We'll do the whole nine yards. We got video, photo, everything you could want to learn a little bit more about Penn State and get the Penn State side of it. So, you know, orange jerseys or not, I think it's going to be a really unique unique atmosphere, unique game, and I'm excited to get down there.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. Y'all, the Purdue, I know you went to Purdue, right, for that first game.
Yes.
That was a great atmosphere there. So, I mean, Auburn has had the home crowd affect things. I thought it was interesting that Franklin actually referenced there was a series where San Jose State had a goal line situation, first and goal at the two. He referenced, he said, yeah, you know, in front of their scoreboard, it's going to be difficult because they did have two false starts there, ended up having to kick a field goal. And so it should be on par. I know Penn State's crowd. Obviously it's hard to do it like them. That was the biggest crowd last year Auburn had ever played in a game against. But Auburn will do their best. I think it's going to be a great environment for college football. And I know it's probably a little colder up there for y'all, but, man, this week you step outside, it's like high 70s.
So it was in the mid 50s this morning. I was in sweats all morning, had the windows open. It was great. But, you know, Franklin says that they're getting them ready. They actually started prepping the silent count last week before Ohio, which is always really interesting when you get that nugget from, the team that is so 1-0 focused, where they let the guard down, that we might have been looking ahead a little bit. But Franklin said that they went into their indoor facility, they closed the doors, cranked up the heat, cranked up the music, and went through practice that way. So I think they're trying to pull out all the stops to be ready. We'll see how that pays off. But as all Penn State players have been quick to mention, you know, they've played at Ohio State before. Some of them have played before a crowd at Michigan. Last time they were at Michigan was during the pandemic. But, you know, they've played at Iowa, they've played, you know, they say that they know these environments. So it's going to be fun either way, I think.
Yeah. And certainly Auburn fans are looking forward to it after the first couple games of the year weren't against the biggest opponents. But again, like I said, against San Jose State, they were kind of needed to keep the team in the game there. So thank you so much again to Daniel for hopping on and joining us today. Hope all of our listeners enjoyed that insight. If you guys enjoyed the show, please go leave us a 5-star review. That is the number one thing that helps us out. The bumper music is by Beats by Mordecai. You guys can follow him on Twitter, SoundCloud, and Instagram. Everybody enjoy the game today. Me and Jason, I know we didn't have it last week after the late finish. We will have our reaction show after the game, either late tonight or early Sunday morning. So until then, everybody enjoy the game, and we'll catch y'all later.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.